From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of December 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, it appears all hope of passing a new farm bill in the lame duck session of Congress is gone. Legislators are working on the extension of existing rules. And the CFTC has approved a rule requiring brokers to record telephone conversations when they're negotiating contracts. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And at the end of this half hour, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit were lower on the day. The March contract at $7.90 on a settlement price down 15 and a quarter cents. May futures at 802, 15 and a quarter or lower as well. July futures, that's the harvest month, also down 15 and a quarter. Settlement price there at 807 and three quarters. The hard red in Kansas City a loss today, down 3 3/4 at $8.73 on the settlement price. From the corn pit back in Chicago, these are closes and not settlement prices. The nearby contract, March futures, 697 and a quarter, down 5 3/4. The May at 699.5, down 7.5. And July corn at $6.97 and a quarter, down 8.5 cents. September, 622 3/4, down 9 1/4. Next year's December, this one is a settlement price. They just arrived, 603 3/4, finished 9 3/4 lower for next year. Bean futures, nearby contract in the January closes for the day, and not settlement prices, down 28.5 cents at $14.08. The March at 1404, that's down 27. May soybeans, $13.95, down 24.5, and July at $13.88 3/4, down 25 1/4. August soybeans, $13.63 5, 22 3/4 lower, and November beans, $12.87 3/4, down 13 1/4 cents. Bean meal futures down $8.80. Bean oil in the lead at $47.91, down 50 cents. Live cattle futures finished the February at $133.50, that's 85 cents lower. March feeders at $154.85, down 90, and the April lean hogs, $91.17.5, down 27.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby contract for the crude oil trading at $90.11 a barrel, 13 cents higher. RBOB gasoline, or the wholesale price, at $275.5, up a penny and 2 cents. And ethanol trading at $2.21. That's just about 0.4 cents lower. The difference between the two is now 54.5 cents. That's a penny and 6 cents wider than it was yesterday. And to the very positive side of blending ethanol into the gasoline supply. January heating oil futures or diesel fuel at $3.50 and 7 cents. That's up 2 1/10 cents. And the gold futures at $1,645.20 an ounce, down $21.50. The U.S. dollar trading at 79.25 is 0.01 lower. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Occasional rain. That'll come before 3 o'clock Central Time. Then rain and snow. A high near 52 today. Winds out of the southwest at 21 to 30 with gusts as high as 48. The chance of precipitation at 90%. Total daytime snow accumulation of less than 0.5 inch possible. And then, of course, we will see falling temperatures. Snow likely with areas of blowing snow before midnight tonight. Then areas of blowing snow after midnight. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low of 20 degrees. Winds out of the west to northwest at 28 to 30. That won't help. And 60 miles an hour is a gust. Chance of precipitation, 60%. New snow accumulation, less than 1 inch overnight. Friday, sunny skies and the high of 28 degrees. Wind chill value between 3 and 13. That's right, 3 and 13. It's going to feel cold tomorrow. Blustery with a west-northwest wind at 20 to 26. Gusting all the way to 40 miles an hour. More on the forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Time to check what's been happening in the futures markets. On the phone line with us, as usual, for a Thursday afternoon, it is the 20th day of December, is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Doing fine, Todd, and listening to that forecast, now I know why I moved south.
You know what you could have done, though? If you stayed here, you could have sent really good basketball team.
Well, what about Johnny Football and those A&M Aggies?
I know. Okay, you know what we ought to talk about is the marketplace. How about that? Oh, man, it was kind of ugly today, and it's been an ugly week. Am I right that on the lead option or continuation for the soybeans that we have now posted an outside down week, and we don't have a chance to change that, right?
Let me take a look on the lead futures. I didn't necessarily notice an outside down week, but I guess you do have to say that because we did make a high on the 17th there at 15.08 and three quarters. And we clearly, actually, with today's losses, we have given back about 76%, which is 76% retracement of the advance that we had during November. This is a place for the market to kind of try to stabilize. I look at your technical indicators, and they're really not oversold enough to get any help on that direction. But I think with the big decline that we saw here, basically 3 days in a row, basically was tipped by all of these China cancellations. We had 300,000 tons canceled from China earlier in the week with 120,000 to unknown. And then today, USDA announced that we lost another 540,000 tons of China business. So when you add those all up, it's almost a million tons at one crack. So the market had to respond to it. I'm not necessarily as concerned about it than maybe the market has reacted, but there's no doubt when you lose demand like that, the market is going to have to make price adjustments, and we clearly did this week with the 3 days of pretty good losses.
Do you suppose they're thinking that they'll be able to pick up supplies out of South America in the next couple of months at a cheaper price than what they booked those at from the United States to begin with?
Well, you never know what their strategy or overall buying strategy is, but my guess is yes. I mean, that's what you would suspect to see cancellations like that is that they now have seen some comfort level coming out of the South American or especially the Brazil crop. It looks like it's creeping a little higher. You begin to hear higher production estimates every day or so. So it is creeping higher, 82 million tons. I think some people may think it could be as high as 84 if everything goes good after the first of the year. But as we know from the past, that last 30 days of the growing season in Brazil is a key factor because we have seen some pretty dramatic fall-offs of production prospects. But I think that's probably their general line of thinking is they might be able to pick stuff up cheaper later. That's not uncommon when you have a short crop like we had here in the United States and the big demand. We found out, though, that the soybean crop wasn't necessarily as short as what the early thinking was with back-to-back months now of production advances. How much USDA changes that November number, we'll have to kind of wait and see on that. But that was the big killer here in soybeans this week.
You mentioned a couple of things I want you to follow up on. One, it seems to me that you're thinking that this downside isn't quite done yet. But on the flip side, that you're fundamentally or maybe technically thinking that the marketplace has more in it to the upside at this point. You said that you weren't quite as bearish as what the trade has been this week.
Not. I think a lot of the price action of the past couple of days was no doubt sparked by the China cancellations, but I think a lot of the weakness that we've seen, especially in corn, even in wheat, and then the last 3 days here in soybeans, is still uncertainty over what may or may not happen to the tax rates for next year. And I think you just begin to see more fund liquidation, people taking money out of the market, taking what profits they have and going to print it at today's current rates, whether it's capital gains and or income tax. I think that's part of it. And of course, if you read any of the outside news sources, it kind of looks like, at least for the time being, that both parties are playing chicken with the fiscal cliff only being, you know, I guess 10 days away or so. So I think that kind of contributes to some of this bearishness. The thing that I don't like about the markets is they should be more in a sideways to higher mode at this time of year. We should have our harvest lows pretty well planted in the dirt during the October-November time frame, and the market should be pulling out of those in a sideways to higher. I know when we get into holidays, they kind of stall out a little bit, but making new lows for the decline in corn, I don't think is a good sign that this market's going to have any major rally at any time. I do think we're oversold enough that we could see a bounce start at any time, maybe try to go back to last week's levels in corn. But it looks to me like we might be in more of an old-fashioned seasonal decline, maybe into a winter low. Now that we don't necessarily need to buy additional acres for a growing demand base, our demand base is kind of stabled out here, and all indications are, you know, with Infoma coming out here at 99 million acres, that their surveys are picking up that farmers want to plant corn next year. So with those kind of numbers on the table, the corn market may not need to worry too much about new crop prospects until we get closer to planting.
Well, I figured Informa was just listening to Commodity Week from a couple of weeks ago.
Well, let's hope not. I don't want to take credit for any kind of declines in the market. I was just kind of expressing the way I saw it, that it just looked to me like if farmers have the opportunity to plant corn in a little more favorable conditions, if we get this moisture, this first winter storm here is definitely a help. We got a long ways to go to recharge the soil moisture levels, but everybody likes to plant corn. We all know that. So, we don't want to overdo it either.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I talked to Darrell Good for Commodity Week this morning, and he made the same points that the price of corn is just high enough to keep people planting corn in this coming season. And his thought process was that it would be better if the price faded for corn, and if we had a big crop, that we'd have fewer acres of it. Or if we even had a normal size crop, that we'd have a fewer acres of corn, and each bushel would be worth a bit more money.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, maybe that's what the market may do. That is something I think you have to keep open. Is if this market drifts now into a February low, the insurance average comes in at 550 or something like that. That may, in its by itself, discourage corn plantings on some of the more marginal acres, then all of a sudden you end up with a smaller actual planting and then something for the market to worry about in the spring.
Hey, can I go back to something you mentioned about the capital gains? Because as you watch a whole bunch of things, and you mentioned the funds maybe getting out and printing their profits, but that happens in lots of places. For instance, Apple's faded for the last 2 months. And it's priced down, what, I don't know, not quite a couple $100, but it topped out around 700, and it's something in the 500s at the moment. But it's just a matter of people really looking at what the tax liability might be in 2013, isn't it, as opposed to anything else that's pushing this economy around at this time?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, there's people, I'm included in the camp of bringing some 401k money or actually IRA money into this tax year. Might as well pay this the current rates than run a risk of paying higher rates. So I'm old enough to do that without any penalty. So as soon as I get back to Waco here next week, I'm going to start pulling some money into this current tax year. I think a lot of people are doing that. There's no doubt that's going to bring some pretty good tax receipts into Washington, but it's going to be pretty skinny probably the first quarter of next year. And I think there is concerns that this whole thing is going to accelerate the recessionary type activity that we already have, I think, in the economy. But we'll have to wait and see what Washington does. We actually, we do know that they're not going to do anything until the last minute. It is that's the way things are done in Washington. But markets don't like that uncertainty, taking everything right to the edge. But it is what it is, and what we're seeing here is people printing profits. Now, that could be all bullish next year because people will still have that money around. Now they'll have to pay a higher rate next year, but at least they took the profits at this year's tax rates, and then maybe the money will come back into the commodity and the equity markets and may stir up a pretty good rally in the first part of the year. A lot of it depends upon, I think, overall world economics and how everybody kind of views that. But it could be more bullish at the start of the year. Everything that everybody's liquidating now, then they'll all want to get back in. They're all kind of riverboat gamblers. They can't wait to get back in, even if they got out. So that's the way things go.
You have a safe trip to Waco. Tell Teresa Merry Christmas and have a great New Year, please.
And that goes to all the WLL listening audience. I wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here in the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural futures markets. Of course, you can hear Dan again if you'd like on our website at willag.org, on our mobile website at m.willag.org, or on our phone line, it's just voicemail, at 217-333-3434. It's all a great way to hear what's been happening in the futures markets. Dan Zwicker joins us each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Now it's time to take a look at the agricultural news. Your director of ag programming here at the station, Dave Dickey, is around now to take a look at what's been happening.
In agricultural news, it now appears a new farm bill is dead in the lame duck session of Congress. House Speaker John Boehner told the GOP caucus that he wants a clean bill to address the fiscal cliff, taking the farm bill as an amendment off the table. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas told the press that the farm bill, whether it is the House 600-page version or a 1,000-page version from the Senate, probably does not meet Boehner's definition of what clean is. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow is now co-sponsoring a one-year extension of disaster aid. Until now, she has declined to consider action on disaster aid separate outside a longer five-year farm bill. Congress must still take some action if it is to prevent revived 1949 programs from disrupting markets. Lucas says that no one in the House leadership has talked to him about such language thus far. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission approved a rule that requires brokers to record telephone conversations when they are negotiating futures, options, swaps, and retail foreign exchange contracts. Brokers and dealers that take in more than $5 million a year in revenue, as well as exchange members, will be responsible for recording the conversations. Records of oral communication have to be kept for 1 year. The five-member commission approved the rule in a closed-door vote. The rule will go into effect 60 days after publication in the Federal Register, but firms have a year to comply. Argentina has sent its first shipment of corn to China under a bilateral accord inked earlier this year. Two containers totaling 48.1 metric tons were delivered. Argentina is the world's second largest corn exporter behind the U.S. A Rabobank poll suggests that China's continued influence on agricultural commodity demand and global economic growth, as well as growing weather extremes, are among the key issues facing the food and agriculture industries heading into 2013. Rabobank conducted the poll of more than 350 executives from leading North American food, beverage, and agricultural businesses. Conagra Foods Incorporated's fiscal second quarter earnings rose 17%. For the quarter ending November 25th, Conagra reported a profit of $211.6 million, or 51 cents a share, up from $180.2 million, or 43 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear on our website at willag.org. In fact, we already recorded Commodity Week, but it's not posted there yet. I'll try to get to that a bit earlier tomorrow than usual. Daryl Good will be our guest on Commodity Week. You can find that at willag.org. Let's take a look at the cash grain market on this Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon. Merry Christmas to you, man.
Yep, Merry Christmas to you, Todd.
Well, as you said, just as we were coming on, the market's not making it as merry a Christmas as you hoped. What do you see?
Well, it's, you know, obviously there's a few people that are on the sidelines right now, and then the people that aren't on the sidelines have beat us up pretty hard. I mean, from the high on Monday, we've dropped a dollar in beans this week, so been an interesting week, and I think you know, whenever you come in today and you see exports being pretty abysmal on beans or on corn, and you know, beans, they weren't quite as good as what they have been, it did set the tone for a pretty rough day.
It's a rough day. Will you expect continuation? And it is at all, as Dan Zwicker pointed to earlier in the cast, part of the fiscal cliff and kind of the chicken game they're playing Washington, D.C.?
I totally agree with that synopsis. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that are awfully worried to put their money in anything right now and have a whole lot of confidence until they figure out exactly where we're going with this thing. So I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of guys, there won't be any new money coming in by any means as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, after the first year, maybe everything will shake out, and I sure hope the weakness subsides until then.
Any reason for a producer to get on the high horse and make some sales today or this week other than tax reasons?
On the cash, you know, I mean, it's completely up to them. Most of my guys are down to gambling bushels. If they haven't gotten down to those levels, you know, there's still profitable levels historically. It's just all comes down to the producer's individual situation.
And your bids for the day?
$6.99 on cash corn, $5.78 on fall, $14.09 on cash beans, $12.60 on fall.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's National Sangria Day. It's also St. Dominic of Silos Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first successful cotton spinning machine built using American resources began in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Samuel Slater was the first in the U.S. to reliably duplicate cotton spinning machines. Slater had immigrated secretly from England in 1789 with details of Richard Arkwright's machines memorized while an apprentice in a mill. In 1868, Harvey Samuel Firestone was born. An American industrialist, he started the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company in 1900. In 1906, he teamed up with Henry Ford to provide tires for the Model T. By the 1930s, nearly a quarter of all tires used in the U.S. came from Firestone. His innovations included non-skid tire treads, low-pressure balloon tires, and farm tractor tires. In 1879, Thomas Edison privately demonstrated his incandescent light at Menlo Park, New Jersey. Edison found that cotton filaments could operate for 40 hours inside a glass bulb vacuum. And in 1928, Harry Ramsden opened what would become eventually one of the most famous fish and chips restaurants in the world. The business began in a wooden hut, which still stands today alongside the main restaurant, which seats 250 people. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon, Thursday, in fact, of the month, and on the phone line with us to take that up. And the weather forecast is meteorologist Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the third Thursday events that came out from, the government.
Yes, the National Weather Service, and in their outlook for the month of January, came out today, and they have temperatures below normal in the Dakotas, Montana, and Minnesota, and they have above normal temperatures for Arizona and New Mexico, and the rest of the country they call equal chances, which means probably close to normal. In my view, it looks like they're going to be a fluctuating pattern for the eastern half of the country, so we'll have episodes of warm and cold, making it difficult to establish a trend that will include the entire month. So cold in the north central and warm in the southwest, and equal chances from the Mississippi Valley on eastward to the Atlantic coast. For precipitation, they're looking for above normal precipitation in the Pacific Northwest, also in the upper Midwest above normal precipitation. And if you combine that with below normal temperatures, that looks like they're looking for quite a bit of snow during this period in January in the upper Midwest down as far as central Iowa and just touching northern Illinois. They've got wet weather in the southeastern states, or South Atlantic states, back toward the Mississippi Valley, most of the rain in the Tennessee Valley down into the lower Mississippi Valley. They've got the dry weather in Arizona and New Mexico, so what else is new for wintertime? And they've got equal chances most of the rest of the country. So that appears to be a fairly typical winter pattern for what we call a La Nada pattern, where we don't have, where we have neither a La Nina or an El Nino pattern in effect. The 90-day forecast, if you want to take it through March, is almost exactly the same as we just laid out for you during the month of January. So warm across the south for the latter half of winter, cold across the northern tier of states, and precipitation pretty much dotted along the northern tier of states and in the Ohio Valley region is the other area of good precipitation.
So one other thing, as we look at the weather forecast here for us, it's kind of ugly. It's about 37 degrees out at the moment, but it's going to get a lot colder. It's 14 mile an hour wind, and it's going to be really bad over the next 24 hours. Actually, tomorrow's going to be really cold, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's going to get down into the low to mid-teens tomorrow, I think, right down through central Illinois, and temperatures will still manage to max out in the mid-30s by the time the storm moving so rapidly gets out of the way and allows the temperatures to moderate. So one day of the pretty cold temperatures in the low teens, and then by Monday morning the lows will only be in the low 20s, and then we'll have the 20s to the mid-30s thereafter. A few inches of snow I think you're in for before this ends.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
That is Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us. Be safe and stay warm over the next 24 hours. I'm Todd Gleason.